This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike DeBusky. One person has been killed in Teller County, Colorado, after an elevator at a gold mine, a popular tourist destination, malfunctioned. 11 people were rescued from that elevator, but about a dozen more remain trapped underground. Sheriff Jason Mikesell says those people are safe at the bottom of the mine shaft.
I want to keep people calm, because I can't get them out until I can get something down there.
He says right now they're working to repair the elevator. Vice President Kamala Harris is addressing supporters in Phoenix, Arizona right now. Earlier tonight, former President Obama held his first rally in support of the vice president in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
We are ready for a better story, one that helps us work together instead of turning against each other.
Former President Trump, meanwhile, spoke in Michigan to the Detroit Economic Forum, criticizing the federal government's response to Hurricanes Helene and Milton in Florida. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Some Wisconsin school districts are the subject of a federal rights complaint. Stuart J. Waddles reports.
Four Wisconsin school districts are accused of violating Title IX by allegedly fostering hostile environments for transgender and non-binary students. The complaints are targeting districts that have allegedly eliminated or excluded gender identity from their anti-discrimination policies. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Doctors in Wisconsin say now is the time to get your annual COVID and flu shots. Dr. Jim Conway of UW Health says previous shots or illnesses won't keep you immune this season. That's because viruses mutate into different variants. Conway says this year's shots are your best defense against this year's strains. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow,
Greg Bach, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Brittany, you ever name any of your vehicles?
I have a Jeep Wrangler right now, and I named it Natural Disaster.
I've been driving Wranglers for forever here.
Right, I'll just see you guys later.
Do you duck anybody?
I've got the duck it bucket in the back.
What
I'm ready to go.
Are you talking about? Hey, where are my Honda Insights at?
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow, weekday morning 6 until 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Remember the whole COVID era? Remember when they were saying, don't take the COVID tests because we don't want the numbers to go up? Remember when the Trump people were saying that? Well, we don't really want the tests because, you know, it'll show we've got numbers. There's a new book out. Again, the more we find out, the more you have investigative journalists looking into things, digging, talking to people, the more we find out, the more we learn about the Trump era, the more we go, do we really want that again? Now, Bob Woodward's got a new book out, War, where his claim is that the former president, Donald Trump, may have had as many as 7 private personal phone calls with Vladimir Putin since leaving the White House. And you kind of got to wonder, you know, what are they doing? What are they talking about? Now, the reason I bring this up, especially with the COVID stuff, because, you know, it has now come out that Trump gave COVID tests to Putin when they were in short supply here. But we find out it's even worse than that. It wasn't just the single use tests. It was the equipment for doing the tests, evidently, that Putin then used to test people coming into the Kremlin so he could protect himself. And when you start and you stop and you think about that for a moment. Now, look, I go back through the Mueller investigation. I go back through the Trump years with all allegations and all of the accusations of there being coordination or collusion or cooperation or whatever word you want to use to say that there were Russians and the Trump campaign, you know, having the same ideas, doing the same things, doing some work. I argued during that era that Trump had always had contacts in Russia because he's done business in Russia since the 90s. And these weren't necessarily quid pro quo situations where you would call them and go, hey, you know, I need you to break some laws to get me elected. It's more of a, we've been friends for a long time. I need some help. Do a buddy a favor. It's the kind of thing that I talk about with the Federalist Society and our Supreme Court. You don't need really to vet a conservative justice. They've been created from law school. They have been tracked. They have been trained. They have been paid. They know how these justices are going to vote. They know how they're going to think because they've been trained to think that way. They don't know any better. These are little go-bots. And I argue it's the same thing in Trump's world with the business partners that he's had all around the world, especially in Russia. So am I surprised that he's dialing it up with Vlad? No. I would like to know what he's talking about. I would like to know whose interests he's having conversations with our number one, number two adversary in the world. I kind of think that's important, don't you? I kind of think it's important that you gave away COVID testing material and machinery during a time when there are Americans dying. I kind of think that's interesting. Kind of think a question maybe somebody might want to ask, even though he's probably never going to answer. It's an interesting kind of moment. And here's the problem that I have, because this is where any other political candidate in my lifetime, this is a sinker. They're done. It's over. Game over. Washed out with the tide. Their career never to be heard from again. Somehow the cult forgives. Because I literally had somebody, oh, that's not true. He didn't do that. That's a hoax. Russia, hoax. No. There's documents. There's stuff. And if it's not, please prove it. I know. You're just reaching for stuff. Do you doubt that Trump has been having conversations with Vlad? Do you doubt that he gave them, the COVID testing material? Do you doubt this? Now, this is the weird part, because we're in a spot where we've got one hurricane that just destroyed a good portion of our country, another one bearing down, causing damage. And we've got the conservatives and Trump as well. Basically saying that we're doing this to ourselves. They're out there disseminating misinformation about these catastrophic hurricanes and claiming, evidently, and I was thinking about this today. I like Joe Biden a lot. I think Joe Biden's a fairly smart guy. I'm not going to say the smartest, but I think he's a fairly smart guy. He's done some things that I haven't liked over the years. But he's come around, so tells me he can learn. It's a good thing. So I was thinking about it today. Sleepy Joe, who can't, do anything, somehow during COVID learned coding in his basement so that he was able to rig the presidential election from his basement computer and only did it for himself. Was short-sighted there, didn't learn that lesson, didn't give himself a house in the Senate to deal with. Somehow learned how to do that. He did the coding. He has raised inflation with a flip of a switch. He's figured out how to manipulate our economy to a point to where, families are getting screwed. Corporate America is doing that. And now, evidently, he's figured out how to seed clouds to create superstorms to destroy a part of the country. Now, I haven't figured out the why. Because understand, the sitting administration, they're the ones going to bear the brunt of the responsibility for whatever response happens. And none of this stuff ever really goes exactly the way we want. And what you have is you have Trump running out there while simultaneously saying, well, You know, they could have done this. They, you know, Marjorie Trainwreck Greene gone, you don't think we can do it? I don't know. But why would we do it to ourselves? So there's part of me that goes, I hope that they continue to attack FEMA. Because understand what FEMA is and who they are. FEMA is not an army. FEMA doesn't send in, you know, peacekeepers or anything. They send in resources. They send in a guy with a checkbook. And do you know what the guy with the checkbook does? He pays people from all over the country who converge on these areas that need help. And he pays them to do stuff. So literally, I have a friend right now. They're making their way down to North Carolina. They've got some, you know, some earth-moving equipment. They've got some backhoes, some stuff that they think is going to be very helpful to open up some roads, to move some trees, to do some stuff. And they're going to go down, and they're going to get paid for the work that they do. And they're going to get paid pretty well. They're going to get paid prevailing wage rates and a whole bunch of other stuff. So they're going to make some money at it. But more importantly, It's the community coming together and ensuring that they help each other. So the guy with the checkbook is Biden. So if the argument is that, you know, the Biden's just floating cash around, I get that. But they're attacking FEMA. They're only giving $750 away? It's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy all the stuff that they do that they get away with. That the base doesn't seem to grasp. For instance, we talked about the other day on the program about Oklahoma and the school superintendent there, Ryan Walters, wanting to buy, what was it, something like, you know, 50 or 60,000 Bibles. And the criteria for the Bible is they had to have the founding documents in them, and they had to be leather bound or real fake imitation leather. And there's only one Bible on the market that meets that, and it's the Trump Bible. And, you know, at $60 a pop, huge windfall for Trump, considering the average Bible cost a couple of bucks. We now find out those Trump Bibles, they're made in China. In fact, they shipped 120,000 of them to the U.S. at a cost of about $3 a piece. Trump's selling them for 60. I guess I have some questions. One, are there tariffs on Bibles coming from China? Will those tariffs help offset the costs of the jobs that are going to be lost? Or are you going to get a waiver for it? I don't know. But here's the weird thing, and this is where the red hats, who were wearing hats made in freaking China, buy into his rhetoric. But again, it's not new. You think about, you know, Trump Home. Furniture and home decorating things made in China. Think about Trump steaks. There was a lot of criticism for where it was sourced. A lot of people found it was from China. The Trump wine, which have had Chinese manufacturing elements in it. The Trump ties, famous David Letterman on TV with him, made in China. The Trump shirts, same thing. Trump golf balls have been produced overseas. Trump freaking water. The bottled water from Trump, some of it sourced from China. The fragrance, the Trump fragrances, the Trump branded clothing, the Trump luggage. Go down the list of all of the things that Donald Trump has slapped his name on that were made in China. Because look, for him, it's all about the money. It's about the money. It's always been about the money. All of this, this presidential campaign is about misinformation and merchandising more than it's about running for president. And yet there are still some who, regardless of reality, continue to support this guy. It's amazing to me that we would look at all of these things, and every day it's something new. Every day there's another fantastical situation that would sink anyone else. So what is it? What is it about Donald Trump? Now, some people will say it's the racism. Some will say it's the misogyny. Some will say it's the homophobia. Some will say it's, you know, this calling to what America used to be, whatever the heck that means. And I can't give a definitive answer. The folks that I know, it's a belief that something was wrong and there's a protest vote and maybe he's it. The anger. He's getting the anger vote, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how bad he is, because we've been convinced as a society, or at least a good portion of us, that the other side's worse. That somehow, you know, the Democrats are evil. When the reality is, you think about all of the things that have happened over my lifespan here. It's come out of conservative think tanks, conservative policy. It's all been the business brand. Every bad thing that's come and harmed the working class has come at the behest of a profiteer, of a billionaire, of a corporation, of an ideologue. And I keep coming back to this question, when do we wake up? When do we say no more? When do we flush the system? And we start with the orange. We start with Donald Trump. And maybe he can take his Chinese Bibles with him. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the mayor of Scranton about the big rally Trump held there. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, weirdest thing I've ever seen. On Wednesday, Trump went to Scranton to hold a little get-together, a little gathering. I'm guessing the crowd size in Scranton wasn't impressive enough. So the one who is most concerned about size thought he would show the crowd size from another rally. I'm watching this going, is this really happening? Answer, yeah. And that wasn't the craziest thing. That he came in to the Undertaker's theme song, which again, weird stuff. But here to share some thoughts on the big rally and what it meant to the area, the Scranton area. I've asked the Scranton mayor to come talk with us. Paige Cognetti is the mayor of Scranton, a Democrat, by the way, which is weird. Trump would go into that neck of the woods, but here to share some thoughts on the event. Mayor Cognetti, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
So, first question I got for you. Have you gotten the check yet to pay for all the costs that you're going to have to incur because Trump invaded your city?
So we don't hold our breath on those things. Here in Scranton, we have a lot of high-profile visits, and unfortunately, we don't tend to recoup those costs. But, you know, no matter who it is that comes in, our law enforcement has great relationships. We work very hard to make sure that those VIPs get in and out safely. And we sure have a lot of them. We welcomed Ukrainian President Zelensky just a few weeks ago. That was an incredible honor that I never even dreamed of having to meet him. And we have, you know, President Biden, who's from Scranton. We have him here often, both for presidential visits and also, you know, when a loved one dies, he comes in. And that's what happened a couple weeks ago. So we did have another visitor today, the former president. He's wheels up now on his way to Reading, so came in and out safely. And I hope that he was able to see all the scaffolding around the buildings that we're rehabbing, the excavators digging out, making new roads and bridges and fixing our infrastructure. Because under President Biden, infrastructure is not a joke. It's actually a real thing. And we've got more than shovels in the ground. We have a lot of people at work. We have a lot of apprentice programs that are open and full of people that want to figure out a career where they can raise a family and buy a home. So it's all coming together in Scranton as these years have gone on. And I want Kamala Harris to be in that seat starting in January so she continue the success.
Yeah, and not just Scranton, all across Pennsylvania, President Biden actually did what Donald Trump talked about. Now, we, in Donald Trump's, you know, to his defense, we did have a lot of photo ops. There were some really cute pictures of him driving trucks, little hat with a shovel. There was lots of photo ops. No real jobs for people, but at least some entertainment. Is that worth something?
Listen, you got to give it to him. He is very good at marketing. We have been seeing it for my entire lifetime. And unfortunately, we're here in year 9 of it dominating not just American headlines, but world headlines. We lost, 275,000 jobs in Pennsylvania during his tenure. We're up 500,000 jobs during the Biden-Harris years. So we've lived this here in Pennsylvania. We've seen it. I came into office January 2020. COVID hit quickly, but it's a sharp contrast what it's like working with the Trump administration versus the Biden administration. The folks at the White House, not only do they pick up the phone, they pick up the phone and call mayors proactively asking what we need, whether it's a pandemic or a natural disaster. I mean, they are on top of it. They know that local government matters, and it's been a stark difference in these few years versus what it was like under Trump.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because in his remarks, he had talked about FEMA, no money. They're giving all the money to the immigrants. This fantasy world that he's created in his head, but the faithful are buying it. So the story that you're telling is, you know, the administration actually listens.
They don't even listen. They proactively reach out, right? I mean, the number of times that we mayors have gotten to go to the White House, meet with agency officials, the number of calls on a weekly basis, the transportation calls, labor calls, all these updates all the time. Biden, Kamala Harris administration is full of people who have been in seats like mine, right? Mayors are all over his administration. And I know Kamala, you know, being in local government herself, knows the value of that. They listen to the folks on the ground. With the American Rescue Plan, they gave those dollars directly to us. They trusted us to make the decisions. We've been able to deploy those dollars, whether it's fixing our city hall that was built in 1888 to making sure that our bridges across the city have the funding they need. It's just incredible to be able to do that at the local level. The bipartisan infrastructure law, of course, being the biggest boon to the city of Scranton that we're going to see. We should have an Amtrak line from New York to Scranton here in the coming years. That's going to open up the economy of this entire region. And again, jobs. Think of all the jobs, not just constructing those projects, but going into the design of those projects. Folks that are going to then work and live in the different buildings that are going to get rehabbed and built. The economic multipliers keep going and going and going for years. Under Trump, it was just, like you said, a lot of pomp and circumstance.
Well, I remember during the Trump years, Scranton was one of the places that was really struggling. You had some issues with your fire department. I understand you've got, you know, fire chiefs and people from Scranton down helping, you know, people in North Carolina and Florida, to where before you were just trying to hold on. Scranton, as I remember it during the Trump years, was a place that was really struggling. And now, from what I talk to people all the time, there's a new kind of feel, a new life. Like, Scranton can be Scranton again.
Yeah, our economy keeps growing, and it's not to dismiss folks that are, you know, really still looking at the bills, utility bills, figuring things out, still, you know, smarting from inflation, especially in 2021, 22, 23, that has been difficult. So people are feeling that still. I understand that. But when you go to fill up your gas tank, you know, that gas is in some places under $3, just hovering around $3. Those prices have come down. They are coming down. Those interest rates are coming down. The stock market is doing really well. Our housing prices are starting to level. So on an individual case-by-case basis, I get it. I try to talk to as many people as possible. But jobs are available. Wages are going up. We're going to keep fighting for, you know, the minimum wage here in Pennsylvania. We got to keep these jobs open, though. We got to keep folks like, you know, Kamala in office with figuring out what that new industrial policy for America looks like, not spending all our time naming and shaming and, you know, threatening to sue a certain company for political reasons. But what is the chessboard that we can set for American companies? What can we reshore? How can the DOD invest in manufacturing here? That's been a huge piece of our economy here is defense manufacturing. That's ticking up with DOD investment under the Biden-Harris administration. So these multipliers in our economy keep going and going, and we've got to make sure that continues, because another Trump presidency will be more chaos. It'll be, you know, coming after whether it's political leaders or business leaders. He likes to single people out. He likes to try to, you know, take people out for his political gain. He wants to erode the federal government, erode our trust in institutions. And that's what we're seeing right now, tragically, with the storms in North Carolina. And right as we speak, as Milton hits in Florida, they're trying to undermine our faith in institutions, undermine what's actually happening on the ground with FEMA, as far as Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that this is a storm concocted by Poseidon, Joe Biden, or whatever the hell they're saying. It's just, it's ludicrous. It's scary. We got to make sure folks somehow find their way back off of those social media algorithms that are getting this disinformation to them.
Well, when you don't actually have a plan, the best thing you can do is scare people. Because look, I think we're on the right track. I think the Biden presidency has been transformational in moving us away from neoliberalism and the bad trade deals and the horrible tax policies that got us into the mess that we're in, and are moving us in the right direction. And we're seeing that in a number of areas. A lot more to be done, an awful lot more, but heading in the right direction. Because they actually have a policy. They actually have plans. There's actually documents that you can read, as opposed to, well, just kind of concepts of a plan.
Concepts of a plan or Project 2025, which, you know, reading through there, they would kill the SBA loan for disaster victims. What a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a point of a federal budget, but how important those SBA loans are to a business or a family suffering after a natural disaster. Like, it's just, why would you go after these things if you're, it has to mean that your goal is to just kill the institutions, retain and grow power in the executive office. And that's what Donald Trump wants.
No, but I like talking about Project 2025 because, you know, their arrogance has allowed us to get inside of their heads, because they've written down meticulously what their agenda is, what their ideology is, and what kind of America they want. All you have to do is keyword search whatever your issue is, and I'm sure there's a bad idea in that 900 and some pages that you might want to read.
Right. It tells you what they want to do. It tells you who Donald Trump is. If you haven't figured it out yet, that's okay. You still have 4 weeks to figure it out. Donald Trump is telling us who he is. You know, I just saw a clip before we began talking about, you know, he's talking about Mike Pence, and he still thinks that, you know, Mike Pence just didn't step up to the plate. He really, truly did not care if Mike Pence lived or died. This is who this man is. He has been telling us who he is. Now it's up to voters to reject that.
Yeah. Any weird moments during the big rally he had on Wednesday?
You know, it's so strange to have that show come to your town, I will say. And it was, nice, safe, efficient, and we're happy for that. The fact that he was railing on FEMA, railing on Biden during this storm, you know, hitting in live time, it was a good side-by-side where President Biden, Vice President Harris had multiple public briefings today about the storm, pleading with people, if you have not already been listening to your local officials, listen to them now. This is your last chance. You know, contrast that with Trump and the lies. FEMA's not coming. The dollars got, you know, squirreled away for illegal migrants that are, you know, going to come and kill your family. It's just, it is so irresponsible. And I appreciate it. President Biden right now, you know, he's a little bit able, I think, to say some of the things that are on his mind. At one point, I think he just said, what the hell is he talking about? This is so dangerous. And that's exactly what it is. It's very dangerous.
Well, somebody give him some paper towels to throw. At least that was somewhat productive. And that's the scary part. So, you know, we're ticking down to the final days. Clearly, this is a moment where, from your position, I'm sure it's a simple choice. It's that cake or death scenario. But for people in your community, you know, because you're a Democratic mayor in Scranton, a lot of people showed up. You know, what's the message for them, the self-interest for them in saying, look, Scranton needs someone like Kamala Harris in the White House, and not someone like Donald Trump? What message do you throw to them?
I point to all those physical examples that you can see, the excavators everywhere, those bridges that are getting redone. We have calls into our office. There's too much road work and too many detours. It's tough. I get it. But let's make sure those bridges are getting fixed and not falling apart. The scaffolding around our own city hall is a great example of investing in our future while acknowledging and respecting our past. There's all these physical things, even just looking about job opportunities, apprenticeship opportunities, right? Our economy is headed in the right direction. Our, you know, our taxes are coming in really well because people have jobs and they have good wages. So the data, the stories, the actual physical things you can touch and feel in Scranton are a stark contrast to what Donald Trump is trying to say is happening. And it's on us supporting Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to keep getting out information and trying to rebut those lies that people are seeing on, you know, whatever social media they're looking at. We know what 20 or 30% of those are Russian bots or North Korean bots or whatever. You know, we know that that is playing a role, and we just got to help people not fall for it. I guess it's easier to fall for the simplicity of those fear messages, right? Fear, fear, fear. Fear is easy, but it's wrong. It's destructive. And we've got, you know, just 4 short weeks left to make sure that we don't have another chaos presidency under Trump.
Paige Cagnotti, I appreciate you taking time for me. Keep up the amazing work. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
I would like that. Thank you.
Great stuff. Appreciate the Scranton mayor sharing some thoughts. You know, again, when Trump comes to town, there is chaos behind. I want to hear your thoughts. Did you make it? Have you been to a Trump rally? And what's that been like? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to the Talk of Lacrosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the mid-50s. Mostly sunny and still mild tomorrow, high upper 70s. Cooler for the weekend, mostly cloudy and mid-60s Saturday, upper 50s and breezy Sunday with sunshine returning. Some frosty mornings possible to start next week. It's 60 right now.
Matt Nair on air.
The vice presidential debate. Mike from Kenosha is on the line.
Isn't it the whole purpose of a debate to be on television for the public benefit? The narrative, questions, fact-checking, it's inconsistent at best.
You're absolutely right, Mike. Mainstream media is bailing massively by trying to both sides everything and sane wash everything.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, we're seeing an awful lot of opportunistic messaging in the media right now about how union leadership is out of touch with the membership and how they don't listen and how there's this great divide that our media is trying to create. And look, honestly, forthright, there is some difference, and that this is an opportunity to engage, to educate, to maybe learn. And that's why I've asked my next guest to come share some thoughts. He is out on a van tour doing just that, going out to the work sites, talking to members where they are, and traveling across some swing states, one of them our state here in Pennsylvania. That's why I've asked Jimmy Williams Jr. to come talk with us. He's the general president over at the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT.org, their website. Jimmy, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick.
So let's start there. I mean, let's start right from the start. Sean O'Brien has said that he didn't endorse, the Teamsters didn't endorse because the membership is on the other side. They didn't know. This frame in our media now has taken this on, and you know that you guys are just out of touch with your members. What are you seeing as you're out there driving around?
Yeah, look, and you know, thanks for having me on tonight, Rick. You know this, being a Pennsylvanian, we were in Philadelphia for the last 4 days, and today made our trip through your country out here, and now we're out in Pittsburgh. So Pennsylvania being both near and dear to both our hearts. You know, you can't win the White House without Pennsylvania. And, you know, Pennsylvania has a lot of union members that live in the state, and union members can make the difference here. So, you know, from our union's perspective, we try to focus on what we can control, which is our message to our members. And every union really needs to be the one pushing and talking to their members. So it's disheartening at times when you see, you know, a message like, yeah, the Democratic Party has screwed us over for 40 years. Well, look, we've been saying that in our union, too. I've been saying that. I've been on your show saying that I believe the Democratic Party in the past had left behind the union movement and particularly union workers. But that's not the case today. That's not where we stand today. We stand at a real choice on whether or not unions are going to continue to have any sort of say or any sort of influence over the federal government, or be on the outside looking in yet again under another Trump administration. It's that simple. And we have to be that simple when we talk to our members. You know, our members understand when we talk to them directly that, hey, listen, when we say we need to be at the table, the only way to get to the table is to elect Kamala Harris as the president of the United States. And we got 4 years of a track record that shows when somebody says you're going to have a seat at the table, you had a seat at the table. And it's that simple.
Yeah. No, but, you know, in that frame of, you know, for the last 40 years, Democrats haven't been the greatest for working people. And look, I tell the story all the time. I shook Barack Obama's hand twice, and both times he told me we were going to get something better than the Employee Free Choice Act and got nothing. Clinton told us we were going to strike replacement. Didn't get that. Carter was going to overturn Taft-Hartley. That was on the table. None of that got done. And we can point that out and be very honest about it. But on the other side of the coin, Jimmy, is a party that has spent those 40 plus years not just not doing anything, but directly attacking the right of collective bargaining, directly attacking and firing union members. So it seems disingenuous to me to say, well, you know, they've been bad. The other side's trying to kill you. There is a difference.
Do people have short memories? Joe Biden is the first president to ever walk an active picket line, right? That should be reminded to our members every single day between now and Election Day, because that is truly a symbolic effort that showed the true difference of today's Democratic Party versus that 40-year track record of leaving us behind. And right on display is Donald Trump talking to Elon Musk about how much he wants to fire people and how much credit he takes for it and how much he loves the fact that you fire people during union organizing, talking about how he never wanted to pay overtime, still doesn't want to pay overtime, yet here I'm going to all of a sudden magically take taxes away from overtime. I mean, listen, it's the same old playbook, but it's the playbook that is now on display right now, right before our eyes for the next 25, 30 days. And if we don't call it for what it is, we're going to find ourselves back in the way we were 4 years ago. And we don't want to be there.
Yeah. No, and this is where, you know, I come back to, you know, Joe Biden literally walked the walk. He talks the talk. He literally walked the walk. And as a Teamster, as a card-carrying Teamster for a couple of decades now, save the multi-employer's pension fund system. I literally know people who are now going to have a secure retirement and not have to worry about their benefit, their pension being cut. To me, that speaks more than talking. That speaks more than walking. That's an action. And for me, yep, those actions are very important.
Yep. And when we stand in front of our membership in the construction industry, we also have benefited from the multi-employer relief. We also talk to our members about that this federal government actually instituted project labor agreements on all federally funded construction work. Other administrations talked about it, never did it. This administration got it done in the first 2 years in office. We also have the Inflation Reduction Act, the bipartisan infrastructure bill. We also had expansion of Davis-Bacon and prevailing wages. Things that literally were talked about and never done were done. When we talk to our members, we say that should be enough. It would have been enough to have one of those things, not all five of them. We got all five of them.
Yeah.
And all five of them can be taken away with the stroke of the pen under a Trump administration.
No, absolutely. And this is why, again, we're in this moment where I hear people go, but Jimmy, that's Joe Biden. This isn't Joe Biden. This is Kamala Harris. So how do you make that jump from all the great things that the Biden-Harris administration did to say that this is going to carry over to the Harris-Walz administration?
Well, listen, first off, Vice President Harris cast the deciding vote for the multi-employer relief in the American Rescue Plan. Secondly, she cast the deciding vote for the Inflation Reduction Act, which included the expansion of Davis-Bacon and the creation of hundreds of thousands of construction jobs. That should have been enough. However, there's more. It was the Biden-Harris administration that started the task force for worker empowerment. Oh, it was chaired by Vice President Harris. Vice President Harris wants to continue the legacy of President Biden. If anyone thinks that Vice President Harris just sat in a corner during the last 4 years and let Joe Biden do whatever Joe Biden wanted to do, it's crazy. She was a partner in Joe Biden's administration. She was at our training center announcing the expansion of Davis-Bacon. She was, personally. She's been to numerous training centers of ours throughout the 4 years that she served as vice president. You know, that's just the media. That's just people wanting to find a reason not to vote for Vice President Harris.
So what do you say then? Because, you know, I'm going to bring Sean O'Brien up again because, you know, he said, look, my membership split. We can't make a decision. You know, we're going to stay out of this because, you know, the members aren't there. What do you say to a union like yours that may be somewhat similar where the membership is split? You know, how did you come to the decision that that's where you're going to go?
It comes up every time I stand before the membership, Rick. I tell the members simply this: you pay me to tell you the truth. You pay me to give you the facts. I will give you the facts. At the end of the day, you're going to make your decisions. You have that right as an American, but I am going to give you the facts. That is my job as your leader. And if you believe me, then you're going to think twice before you pull that lever in, you know, defiance of your best interest. However, if you want to believe me and you want to listen, we could sit down and talk facts. That's the job of a union leader. The job of a union leader is to explain to the membership their truth. And yeah, at the end of the day, we have members that are absolutely split. There is no doubt. There is no doubt. And some of them will never switch. And that's okay. They're still going to be accepted into our union. They're still members of our union. They're still family members of ours. However, it's our duty to tell them the truth.
Yeah. And what I would say is also is what I've been telling my union brothers and sisters is, look, I was at the convention in Chicago, and I've been to other conventions. There has never been a more pro-union presence in any convention that I've been to than I saw at the DNC convention in Chicago.
Over 20% of the delegates to the Democratic National Convention were car-carrying union members that carried themselves as union members. You cannot say the same for the Republican Party. I could tell you there was probably less than 2% or less than 1% of the people at the Republican National Convention that would call themselves union members, simply put. And we have to work within the Democratic Party at this point in order to win the games for our membership that we need to win. Now, if the Republican Party somehow someday wakes up and says, listen, we want to support things like the PRO Act. We want to support things like the expansion of Davis-Bacon. We want to support things like a registered apprenticeship programs. We're all ears. I'll talk to anybody. I don't care what party you come from, about the issues that affect my members.
As long as you're
However,
sincere.
They haven't done that.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're sincere, and I don't believe these overtures and haven't believed them for the last couple of years are actually sincere because the votes aren't there. And as you pointed out, to save the multi-employer pension fund, the Vice President Kamala Harris had to cast the deciding vote, which meant there was not one Republican who voted for it.
No. And when the PRO Act was put up before the House twice, there was only 5 Republicans that voted in passage of the PRO Act. It was because it was a safe vote. And believe me, they have targets on their back from the extreme right because they want to get that number down to 0.
So let me ask you, as the days tick away and you're out there, you're explaining this position. What happens if Trump becomes president question come up? I mean, because we seem to have forgotten what 4 years under Donald Trump looked like, and we seem to have forgotten what he did. And I know as a Teamster, I know my union is doing incredible work organizing Amazon drivers right now, and they're doing that because Joe Biden reinstated the joint employer rule that Donald Trump threw out the window. So what are we expecting? What could we expect from a Trump presidency?
I mean, listen, we're going to have to prepare to organize in a new lens. I mean, listen, the National Labor Relations Board is going to be stripped of Jennifer Abruzzo, who's been the most active general counsel for organized labor in its history. You know, decisions like the CEMEX decision that gives us bargaining orders to get employers to the table go by the wayside. You know, there's more. A Department of Labor that's going to be run by big business for big business is not going to make organizing as easy as it has been over the last 4 years. Why do you think we're getting the wins and the gains that we've had over the last 4 years? We have a government that's actually supporting organizing. A Donald Trump administration, we're going to have to prepare for resistance, defiance, and we're going to have even more militancy in our organizing efforts than we have right now. And that's simply put the truth. That's the reality of the way it's going to be. In the construction industry, the last 2 years of Donald Trump's administration, we spent 2 years having to mobilize just to defend our apprenticeship programs. He wanted to take away the registered federal apprenticeship system. He did it through rulemaking, and we pushed back on it, and we mobilized our members. That's what 4 years of Donald Trump is going to look like on every level.
So how come we don't hear that in the corporate-controlled media that struck it? I know the answer, but I'm throwing it out here because we hear about all the division that's going on in your ranks. How come we don't hear that?
Because nobody wants to talk about the real facts. Because it is corporate-controlled media, Rick. You know this. You know, you're one of only a few voices out there that even give a voice to the working class on a regular basis, not in some five-minute soundbite to have, oh, the UAW is on strike or Boeing workers are on strike. Well, you know what? You know, workers have been beat back for the last 50 years, and the word strike finally means something. Okay, good. They're going to cover it. Guess what? The minute that that isn't popular anymore, it's not going to be covered anymore, and that's just the reality. Unions are more popular. We get a little more airtime, but it's not. And you never hear anybody talk about the true underpinnings of the organized labor movement, of what the working class is up against in this country. And someday that message has to change and filter out to everybody.
Now, I know you guys are talking an awful lot about Project 2025, especially in the building trades, where they're very clear. The target on your members' back is very, it's glow in the dark clear that they want to overturn prevailing wage. They want to do away with project labor agreements. They want to do away with all of that stuff that helps members. Is that something that is resonating as you talk to people on the streets?
I mean, we are absolutely beating that drum. I can tell you this much, for whatever reason, within the strong support that Donald Trump has, it doesn't matter amongst our membership. It's those in the middle. It's those people that need to make decisions based on their realities of what each side is trying to do that we are focused on. Listen, you're not going to change somebody's mind after Donald Trump's been out there since 2014, and you are not changing somebody's mind who has bought into a racist rhetoric, who has believed in the fact that others are out there to hurt them, including, and oftentimes they even say, your union leadership. Right? We're not changing their minds. Obviously, we're going to fight like hell for them because that's what we do. We represent our membership. It's those in the middle that need the education that you don't get by watching your local news. You don't get it by watching, you know, the mainstream media. You get it by talking to your union leaders, your organizers, your business reps. That's how you're going to filter it out, and that's how you're going to win back the working class within our membership.
Yeah, you're never going to
move. They're long conversations, Rick.
Oh, absolutely. And this is where I've been saying for years, and the genesis of this program 19 years ago was to talk to working people in a way that you know, the left, that labor hasn't done very much of. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that. But it's about having those long form conversations and in a way that resonates with us. Because, look, I think everyone, the thing that unites us, and this is why I'm such a big fan of labor unions, because it gives us something in common. The want of better wages, hours, and working conditions is something that can unite us. All of that other stuff, we can bicker and negotiate and figure out. But that idea that we're going to fight for better lives for ourselves and for our children, that's what can reunite us. And I think that's the aspirational politic that I wish we would spend more time on.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's why, you know, I love what President Shuler at the AFL-CIO has done with her message of it's better in a union. It's very simple, and it gives you plenty of things to talk about. Yes, it is better in a union because you have better working conditions. You have better wages. You have better benefits. You have a better way of life. Like, those are the bread and butter issues that our membership knows. Yep. Our membership knows that, and we have to tap into that when we have these political conversations.
Well, I look at myself right now. We are going through a family crisis. As everyone knows, my wife was in a motorcycle accident. We don't know what's going to happen yet, but the last thing I'm thinking about is if I have a job when I return, because I know I have not just the Family Medical Leave Act for 12 weeks, but I know I have as much time as I need because my union and my union contract is there to help back me up. Whereas if I were in an at-will situation, I might have to be working right now.
Yeah, and just imagine if that goes away. And just imagine if, you know, unions are weakened like they had been under previous administrations. Just imagine if right to work comes in.
Yep.
Just imagine all of those things that are possible under a Project 2025. And Rick, I want to say personally, you know, your family's in our thoughts and prayers. you know, because we are, a family within the labor movement. And I know you're going through some hard times, brother. And, you know, anything you need, we're there for you.
I appreciate that, Jimmy. Thank you so much. Last question I've got for you. The 30-second elevator, conversation you give the folks. What are you telling people? What should our audience know? What do you want people to know?
Yeah, I wish it was. I wish we had more time than 30 seconds. But, you know, there's two things that we've been saying to our members. First off, if you really think things were better off 4 years ago, 4 years ago, you couldn't even have Thanksgiving dinner with your family. There wasn't a vaccine. Unemployment was at the highest level it ever was. The economy was in shambles. And inflation started 4 years ago under Donald Trump's watch. So rethink that things were better 4 years ago. Second thing, if you want the labor movement, you want your union to have a voice in the federal government, then you better think twice before you vote for Donald Trump, and think twice and think long and hard about voting for Vice President Harris.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it still comes back to your own kitchen table economics. And as an old timer told me right when I started in the union, you vote your job. And it's that simple for me. But Jimmy Williams Jr., I appreciate the time. Get back out there driving the van around and do that educating.
All right, Rick. Thanks, man.
Thank you so much. Jimmy Williams Jr., president of IUPAT, the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. Check out their website, iupat.org. We'll get links out on social media. I want to hear your thoughts. What are you hearing? Is this a big issue for you as a union member, for a family member? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1913. At 2:02 in the afternoon, President Woodrow Wilson at the White House touched off an explosion at the Gamboa Dike in Panama. With that touch of a button, the last barrier to joining the waters of the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans through the Panama Canal went up in smoke. The Chicago Tribune described the scene in Panama, writing, quote, "Then suddenly came the muffled roar of the discharge of 1,600 pounds of dynamite, which sent a shower of water, mud, and rock high into the air. Spreading out as it went upward, the hole heavily veiled into a cloud of smoke. As water began to pour through the rent made by the explosion, the crowd sent up a great cheer. It was a noteworthy moment in the construction of the canal. But that moment came at a staggering cost of workers' lives. For more than 20 years, the French and then the United States worked on the canal project. The U.S. phase lasted for a decade. As many as 45,000 workers toiled on the canal during the peak years of construction. These workers came from the United States, Europe, Asia, and Panama. West Indians formed the core of the work crews. These workers faced stifling heat, brutal working conditions, and poor accommodations. Workers had to contend with ravaging disease, poisonous snakes, and torrential rains. Workers also faced racial discrimination. For example, West Indian workers earned half the hourly wages of U.S. and European workers. They also lived in much more crowded barracks. Worker deaths were so frequent that death or funerary trains made continual runs to bring the bodies away from the construction site. It is estimated that more than 27,000 men died building the canal. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I gotta tell you, I really like Jimmy Williams Jr. Good guy, smart guy, good leader. And you know, as he said, look, you know, at the end of the day, you know, O'Brien's not wrong in saying that we're split as a country. We're split. Labor union members are split. There's a divide right now, and I argue that the reason that labor union members are split is in a lot of cases for the last, you know, 30, 40 years, the right wing has spent a lot of time talking to their to the members. You know, right wing talk radio has dominated the airwaves for decades. So working people listen to radio, and you learn by osmosis, and a lot of what is now common thought is wrong. But it comes from the right wing radio dominance, cable news dominance, internet dominance. It comes from their media presence. So when I've talked about the Teamsters president. I do that from a personal position as a member, but also as someone who sees the politics as something very important. And I had a number of people reach out, and you know, on both sides of the pro Sean O'Brien and the anti Sean O'Brien thing, asking, you know, what do you think of his interview with this right wing comedian? And I said, look, like his RNC speech, I agree with about 2/3 of what he had to say. About 2/3 of it, the stuff that we say here on the program all the time, much like we just talked with Jimmy Williams Jr. about, I've been saying Democrats, you know, have not been the greatest friend. They haven't accomplished much. I've told the Obama story 1,000 times that, you know, he told me we were getting out of the Employee Free Choice Act or something better and got nothing. And that's been the MO for Democrats for a very long time. And there are thousands of reasons for that. Mostly the Republicans. So when I listened to O'Brien talk, and I saw some of the interview that he did with this very popular right-wing commentator, it's in that right-wing frame. Well, what have Democrats done for you? Well, what have Republicans done to you should have been the response. Because understand, all of this stuff is, okay, well, Democrats haven't been great, but Republicans have been trying to eliminate us. They have been trying to destroy collective bargaining. They've been destroy prevailing wage. They've been trying to destroy everything that built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity. And look, I like the idea of, I would love if Republicans weren't anti-labor. I don't see them coming around. I see them, you know, making the overture. But, you know, I point to a number of things in the interview that are eye-opening. This kind of convenient history. For instance, he talks about the reason that the Teamsters didn't endorse in 96 was because Bill Clinton, and to use his word, Bill Clinton was responsible for NAFTA. Well, that's lazy history. The reality is NAFTA was birthed under Ronald Reagan. The idea of a North American trade pact came out during the Reagan years. It was fully negotiated and several portions of it signed during the H.W. Bush years. If you remember the debates of 92, where we got the Ross Perot giant second sound, both the Democrat and the Republican were in agreement on NAFTA. What Sean O'Brien went to the RNC and said, hey, you know, we want bipartisanship. And I said, you know, the thing that he pointed out, the Motor Carrier Act of 1980, that was total bipartisanship, yet he only pointed at the Democrats for it happening, not the Republicans who were hugely a part of it. And the same thing with NAFTA. Again, it was bipartisanship, the kind of thing that Sean O'Brien says he wants to have. The only guy who was really against it was the big-eared guy from Texas who said giant seconds out, and a number of labor unions. Now you go, Bush would have made it worse. Clinton made it a little bit marginally, almost better with side agreements on labor and environment, but still destructive. And yes, bad. And I've beat up on Clinton for decades because of that. But you don't go and say, well, Bob Dole would have been better. Because Bob Dole, by the way, is the guy who filibustered the bill that Clinton would have signed for strike replacement. Again, it's easy to point your finger at people who are on your side and beat them up and forget about the people who have been adamantly opposed to your existence. That's my problem. And look, as a card-carrying, dues-paying member of the Teamsters Union, I have a voice, I have a say, but in the end of it, I'm going to stand with Sean O'Brien on the organizing, on the fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, on the contract fights. I will be there 100%. Because I disagree with this does not make me disloyal. Does not make me say I'm going to give up my union card and to be damned. Never. Never. Understand, in a democratic institution such as a labor union, members have a say. And this is what O'Brien keeps trying to play with. Members have a say. They have a voice. And I simply choose to exercise mine. So if Sean O'Brien has a problem with that, which I understand he does, well, that's a him problem. But for me, as part of a democratic institution, I will continue to point out where I think the mistakes are. And when I listened to that interview, lots of lazy history, lots of convenient history, but not totally accurate. That's my problem. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, I want to hear it. Weigh in on this as well. Miss any portion of the show at therickSmithShow.com. There you go. Freespeech.org for the video. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.